Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, March 1st, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things this week?
Very good, Graham. It's sunny Cornwall, which is a nice change in the weather.
Yeah, I feel like spring is afoot here. We're getting there. Close. I will say, so this week's a little different, Alex. Last week we had to be on good behavior because we had a special guest hosting with us, but we're back to normal this week. And I actually managed to take a short vacation between episodes. I snuck off to the countryside, like a couple hours south of Paris and got some outdoor time, which was really cool because it's just been, you know, living in a city, as you might imagine, or maybe you can't because you're in a remote spot, but it's been, you know, challenging to be in a city with all these lockdowns and stuff.
Nice. Are you legally allowed to do that? You wouldn't be allowed to do that in the UK right now.
Yeah, in France, we're allowed to move around and stuff, nice. At least for now. They're telling us that may be taken away from us soon. But it was cool just to be totally out in the wilderness and not have to worry about stuff. So it was kind of nice. So I did want to mention, before we talk about everything that happened last week with admission stuff, I wanted to mention that we have a really interesting event coming up in 2 days' time on Wednesday, March 3rd. And it's an admissions event with Wharton, MIT, Berkeley, Yale, and Carnegie Mellon. And that's basically, we've got admissions representatives from each of those schools coming to talk about deferred enrollment programs. So this is for college kids who are juniors and seniors who are thinking about applying to business school and who can basically lock up a seat in an MBA class by applying now. It's a really cool program or set of programs that are on offer from these schools. And if you want to sign up, you just go to bit.ly/early MBA, and that's all lowercase. So sign up because spots are filling up, and yeah, this will be a fun event. It's at noon Eastern on Wednesday, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, Alex, tell us about what happened last week.
You went to the barbers, Graham.
Yes. Yeah, we're having an event, so I had to, I had my COVID beard going, and I think the first time we did a Zoom in a while, you were like, what's going on? It made me realize that I should go to the barber in order to get ready for this big event. So I'm looking sharp, ready to go.
Very good.
Yeah, well, but talk about last week.
Yeah, two big events last week. One was Sloan finally releasing those interview invites we've all been patiently waiting for. So that occurred on Thursday. So obviously that stimulates a lot of activity on Livewire. Congratulations to those folks that got the interview invite and so on and so forth. So that was very good. The other big event, Graham, is I've joined Clubhouse.
Oh, yes.
I'm very excited by this. So all of our listeners, and I'm not going to pretend to know exactly how many of you that are, presume you're all on Clubhouse because you're listening to a podcast. It seems like the right sort of thing you would do, listening to a podcast, you'd be on Clubhouse. Please connect with me. I'm Alex Brown Racing on Clubhouse.
Yeah, and actually, because of you, I am now on Clubhouse too. And I don't know my handle. I think it's just my name. Maybe I have to double check that. But I can be found too, just searching for Graham Richmond. And yeah, we're going to stay tuned because we're going to do some fun stuff with Clubhouse in the future. And for those of you who don't know, Clubhouse is kind of like, I would almost describe it as sort of live podcasting or live radio in a sense. So should be fun. We'll see how it goes. How did you manage to get into this? Because, it's meant to be an exclusive thing, Alex. You need an invitation to get into Clubhouse. So how did you manage to get
I knew you were going to ask. Well, I didn't know you were going to ask me that. And I would feel dreadful not to acknowledge how that occurred. So it was a somewhat of a colleague, Petia Whitmore, who was hosting on Clubhouse an event in the MBA admission space and posted that she was doing this on LinkedIn. And I knew nothing about Clubhouse, but was desperate to learn more. So Petia invited me. But it turns out she hosted the event at 6 o'clock in the evening, East Coast time. So it was way past my bedtime. So I wasn't able to attend, but she did give me feedback. She said it was very good. She had four moderators on the event, and then admissions folks from UT McCombs joined them, as well as another admissions consultant. Had about 25 folks in the audience, and sounds like they had a great conversation. So I'm really looking at how we can explore that medium, Graham, as well as, you know, just participate further in Clubhouse. I've been fascinated by the events that I've attended over the last week, but they have been before my 5 o'clock beer time.
There you go. Yeah. All right, so stay tuned on that front. The other thing I wanted to mention is that we've had like no reviews or ratings of our podcast in what seems to be a few weeks here. I'm just not feeling the love. And Alex, like, I got to say, I think I blame you, because the whole star incentives thing on the website, where our users who are leaving comments and posting and liking stuff are earning points and rewards, maybe they're just too tired from doing all that to go over on the podcast and leave us a review. I don't know. But we'll see if anything happens in the next week or so. But it'd be good to get some more reviews if possible.
No, it would be. And quite honestly, again, having listened to some of these Clubhouse events, a couple of them that I focused on were on podcasting, because there's obviously natural affinity between podcasting and Clubhouse. So I'm learning how important those reviews are. So yeah, anyone that can leave us a review, that'd be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and in a bit of good news here, we have a sponsor that's coming through, and it's not not on this episode, but we've got someone who's lined up for a whole bunch of episodes that I think is going to be starting soon. So I can't reveal who it is yet, but it's kind of exciting. So there, can you believe that there's actually someone out there, Alex, who wants to sponsor us? But it's good, right?
Yeah, brilliant.
So a couple more things. Just obviously, if you're a listener and you have questions for Alex and I, you can always email us at info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject wiretaps and it'll catch our attention, and we'll try to feature your question or whatever you need on the show. The other thing I wanted to mention is we did a very interesting piece on the website written by Lauren on our team about some research out of Wharton and in collaboration with some other entities about vaccines and behavioral kind of stuff. So like, how do you get people to want to be vaccinated? And it's just a really interesting article. And I'm sure that the Wharton kind of paper on it is even more fascinating. But it was just cool to see, you know, people studying this kind of stuff, taking business application and putting it to use in a very practical way. Like, how do you motivate, you know, a couple hundred million people in the United States to go out and get a vaccine, or in any country really? But very, very fascinating stuff. So I encourage people to check out that piece. Alex, do you have anything else this week before we dive into the profiles that we're going to review?
Yeah, I hate to say it, Graham, but somebody did, Alex Kelly did give us a something to talk about, right? Did we not prep it for this session, for this podcast?
I don't know. What is it that we're supposed to talk about? I can't remember.
Yeah, community member question for podcast consideration. Hi, Graham and Alex. One of our site users has submitted a question. So I will read you the question, Graham, since okay. You didn't know about no. this, even though you were copied on it. So you do need to read your email a bit more closely, Graham.
I was on vacation.
Yeah, well, on vacation. Yeah. Very good. I will read it to you. I'll read it reasonably slowly so everybody can hear, but as I'm reading it, think about how you're going to respond live on air.
Yep. All right.
Here's more context to my question about pursuing an MBA or a Master's of Analytics. So this is a question. Is it an MBA or should it be a Master's? I'm currently 31 years old. Will be 32 at the time of matriculation to school. I think this is relevant because outside of the sweet spot age for the MBA, would be interested to get our take on this. And I'm looking to make a career change into analytics consulting / business analytics. I majored in finance at a top undergraduate business school and have been working in equity research for an investment company since graduating from college. Since I already have a business education and have worked in the finance world, which path, MBA or Masters of Analytics, makes the most sense to pursue? I understand there are pros and cons to either path, but I was wondering how Graham would think about this decision. I excluded my name there because I'd like to hear your opinion.
Yeah.
So that's it. Master of Analytics for someone that's focused on transitioning into analytics versus getting an MBA, which could presumably have a concentration in analytics.
Yeah, that is a really good question, because as the listener or, you know, site community member points out, you know, they're out of the sweet spot age for a traditional MBA, potentially, right? I mean, there are some 31, 32-year-olds in all these top MBA programs each year, but they're less common. And this person has a business undergrad. Part of me thinks that if they could find a really good data analytics master's, especially, you know, there's some that I think are on a one-year format, it might be a better ROI if they're just trying to pivot. It sounds like they're fairly seasoned. They have probably what amounts to 8 or 9 years of, you know, full-time work experience at their employer. So they're well established, but they want to make this pivot. I will say, though, that your comment about MBA programs that have a data kind of analytics bent, I mean, Wharton is one that comes to mind. Those could be really valuable, too. And so I would turn back to the candidate and want to know more about, like, where did they go to undergrad? How well did they do? Do they think that they could absolutely ace the GMAT and paint a really compelling story? Because obviously, if they could, you know, run off to Wharton and get an MBA, that might be more valuable network-wise and brand-wise than even a top, you know, data analytics master's. So it's a tough question, and they're really kind of in limbo. Another thing that I was thinking about is, well, what about an executive MBA that also, again, you know, if they could focus a bit that degree within the data analytics domain, that might be useful. But it's clearly a developing field. And I was actually doing some research on this for another project very recently, in which I learned that the second most popular business master's, so like non-MBA specialized master's degree after the master's in finance, is the master's in data analytics. And that's a recent development. I mean, 10 years ago, that was not the case at all. And that's a degree that's really launched onto the scene and been growing rapidly. So, but I'd like to hear what you think, Alex, if we have time.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, it doesn't surprise me that it's the number two master's program. Analytics is so super important. I mean, I would almost think if you're getting a master's in marketing or whatever, unless you're doing it through the lens of analytics, it's going to be much weakened. So analytics is super critical. You know, you need to be the person that can talk to the data scientist to inform the data scientist exactly what you're looking to do and so on and so forth. And that sort of connection with the hardcore programmers is very necessary now. In our world, I would ask this candidate, where do they want to be in 20 years' time? So are they going down this sort of narrow niche of analytics, which is super, super important, and just wanting to further develop and focus only on analytics? Or are they looking at analytics over the next, let's say, 10 years to really develop their career, to then move further up the hierarchy into sort of general management, entrepreneurship, or whatever it might be? So if that's the case, I would err on the side of the MBA with the focus on, with a hard focus on analytics. And again, as you said, there's lots of top programs that are going to provide you essentially the best of both worlds. And I recognize this age of 31 or whatever, maybe adding an additional bit of a dilemma here, but we know that folks are going to top tier programs that are a little bit more seasoned, but they have a really good reason for going back at that point. So it's a really interesting question. I would argue, Graham, that before COVID-19, so we're talking a year and a half ago now, the MBA was all doom and gloom, and it was these masters, one-year master's programs that were eating its lunch. Or at least that, if you read the popular press, that was right. your sort of opinion. I don't see people really suggesting that at this point. But nevertheless, this is a really interesting question. I could go either way, but I would really look at, where do you want to be in 20 years' time? Not necessarily your first job right out of the program, and then start figuring out which is your best path.
Yeah, good advice. I would say, if you're thinking of running your own data analytics consultancy someday, then an MBA might be a good pathway, right? Because it gives you some of those broader skills and you know, or, you know, whatever you might do, even fundraising, stuff like that. So yeah, tough dilemma. But again, people at that age do get into MBA programs all the time. So it's possible. So anyway, great. Thanks for that, you know, submission. I had totally forgotten about it. So appreciate you remembering and us getting it in on the episode. So let's move on and get into our profile reviews. So this is going to be Wiretap's candidate number one. So we have an ApplyWire entry that was submitted from a candidate who is applying to five schools. They are Cornell, Dartmouth, Duke, Georgetown, and Yale. And they actually applied in round two. They're hoping to start this fall. And they've been working in consulting, but want to pivot over to nonprofit or social impact work. They have a GRE score of 323 and a GPA of 3.29. They've been working for 4 years. They're located in DC, and they would love to stay in Washington, D.C. after business school. They mentioned in the notes that they've already received interviews from some of the programs. I think only two they have not heard back from yet. They don't tell us which ones are which. And they also asked an interesting question about how, I guess, they received a part-time job offer. So like a job that they would add on to their existing job. And this is it for a nonprofit. So think of it as an extracurricular type activity, but in the form of a job for a nonprofit. And they were wondering whether they should alert schools to this offer or not, because they already did alert schools to the fact that they'd maybe taken a retake on the GRE and boosted their score. So Alex, what do you make of this candidacy overall and their question about when is it appropriate to contact the admissions team with an update on something?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question. I mean, one of the reasons why I chose this candidate and actually the next candidate, we're talking about folks that are in the process. They've already applied. They're waiting for interview invites and they're anxious. You know, are there things that they can do now to sort of improve their odds and so on and so forth? And there'll be plenty of candidates that sort of fit that bucket as we wait till, you know, maybe in the next 2 to 3 weeks before these round two decisions start to really roll out in any real volume. So this person's done a couple of things. They've retaken the GRE and they've improved their score from, I think it was a 319 to a 320. 323. That's absolutely fair game to make sure that if you've got a new test score, you get it into the schools that you've applied to. If you're still waiting for an interview invite, or if you've gotten the interview invite, or if you've even interviewed, make sure they've all got the current test score. You can't absolutely guarantee that it will be reviewed, depending on the different schools' process. But nevertheless, that's absolutely fair game. A promotion at work would be a similar sort of fair game, I think, in terms of what additional information to submit. Now, my impression with this candidate is they're quite involved in their extracurricular activities, volunteer work and so forth, which is absolutely fantastic. That's definitely going to be a positive element of their candidacy. They're giving back, they're involved, they're more well-rounded and so on and so forth. But it turns out that this volunteer activity, they've actually been offered a sort of a part-time position at. So it's essentially more of a formalization of the role that they have with the organization. And their question was, should I alert the admissions committee of this update? I kind of push back a little bit on this, Graham. And, you know, this candidate is pretty keen to do this. So I basically ultimately told them, if you really think it adds to your story, then keep it brief and submit the update. But nevertheless, I'm more inclined to suggest that this isn't a material addition to a profile and probably doesn't necessarily need to be submitted. And you do run the risk of coming across as a candidate that, you know, they woke up this morning, so therefore I've got to tell the admissions committee that I woke up this morning just in case they want to tell me something today sort of thing. You know, they're over anxious. So that was my pushback a little bit, Graham, but it'd be good to get your thoughts.
Yeah, my thought was exactly the same. And I sometimes think like there's nothing more dangerous than an applicant who's impatient and really waiting for word from schools. And that we see this every year, twice a year, because it happens after round one and also, you know, after round two. So, and the real trick is that, you know, people, they they apply, they wait a bit, they get an interview, they do their interviews, and then they have nothing to do. They're just sitting around. Obviously, they should be doing their work or whatever, but they, you know, they're waiting really nervously to find out yeah. about whether they're going to get in. And yeah, so my view is that I don't think this passes the test of like, I need to alert the admissions committee. Frankly, I feel like, as you said, if they'd been promoted at work or, you know, some massive milestone or changed jobs, that's one thing. But just starting a new job, I mean, it's not like they've accomplished something yet in the new role that would be worth sharing, like, you know, broken some fundraising record or something for this nonprofit. So I tend to say, I don't think this is material enough to shift the balance on their candidacy. You know, I'm going to speculate that they haven't yet heard from maybe, you know, Yale or Dartmouth or something on their list, and that they do have interview invites at the others. And so they're just wondering, can they do anything to move the meter? And I sometimes worry that if you appear to be high maintenance and are reaching out too much to the admissions team, that can work against you as well. So it's a judgment thing. And so I would sit tight on this. But, you know, as you said, if they absolutely feel the need, keep it super brief and just send it along, and it'll probably just be thrown into their file or maybe just pushed aside one way or the other. But again, I don't think this is going to make or break the storyline and whether they get interviews or ultimately acceptances. I do like the candidacy overall. I think they, you know, seem like they have a good chance of getting into at least one, if not several, of these schools. So I think the hardest part is just going to be to sit back and wait.
Yeah, and I wish them the best of luck. Hopefully, like you say, the overall candidacy is actually pretty good. And I do like the fact, I mean, in their younger days, they were doing so much public service, you know, at their school and various other things. So, and that, you know, we want those sorts of people in our top MBA program. So yeah, best of luck to this candidate.
Great. All right, so let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this is another ApplyWire entry, and the candidate has 8 schools on the target list. They also have submitted these applications. So the schools are Cornell, Duke, Georgetown, Michigan, NYU, Rochester, USC, and UVA. They have been working in Big Four tax, pre-business school here, and they want to get into consulting, obviously looking at, you know, Bain, BCG, Deloitte, McKinsey. GMAT score 700, GPA 3.4. This candidate has 5 years of work experience, and they are located in Europe. And they wanted some advice in that, you know, they have a 700 on the GMAT. They were undergrad major in math, and they have a CPA. But the GMAT math score was a 42 raw score, which equates to, I believe, a 41st percentile. So a low math score on the GMAT. And they realized that, you know, they've been getting interviews and things, but with NYU, they were actually waitlisted without interview. And they're worried that this is all related to that combination of, you know, kind of low quant score on the GMAT and a GPA that's decent, 3.4, but not off the charts. So they're wondering, like, what should they do? Should they take the GRE? Should they take MBA math? So kind of this big question, and apparently they can't take the GMAT again because they've already taken it twice online and there's a limit on that. So yeah, what do you make of this, Alex? Like, what should this person do to sort of maybe ease the concerns that the admissions team might have?
Yeah, I mean, this is a bit of an odd one, isn't it? If you're a math major with a CPA, you wouldn't think necessarily that the quant side of your GMAT is going to be the sort of outlier that's sort of creating this concern. They're not able to retake the GMAT in their current sort of situation. So they have to figure out another solution to this particular issue. So they sign up for the MBA math. They do it over the course of a couple of weeks. You've got to put a lot of hours, effort, and energy into it, and they get an A from that. I think that absolutely helps.
Yeah.
You might, you know, if this was a liberal arts major, absolutely, I'd tell them you have to do MBA math. But maybe even in the case of a math major, that can only help. So to the extent that, again, you're a candidate, you're waiting, you're nervous and waiting and waiting. Is there anything that you can do that could help? Clearly, in this case, doing the MBA math can help. So that's a very good step. I would also caution Let's say why I'm on the wait list at Stern. It's an interesting question, but let's say if I'm in the Stern's, I'm ADCOM at Stern, I'm reading a candidate. Let's say they're a good high profile candidate from Europe. Their numbers are pretty good. Obviously, the quant side of the GMAT is a little bit suspect, but they're a math major and they've got a CPA, so I'm really not that bothered about that. I'm looking at the other stuff and I'm thinking, you know what, if this person applied to Columbia or this person applied to some other schools, they're probably going to have a good shot at it. And they haven't nailed why they need to be in New York City at NYU. So just make sure as you're on the wait list for some of these schools, in this candidate's particular case, it's Stern, make sure that you absolutely nail why the program that you're on the wait list for is absolutely a great choice for you. You don't necessarily have to say it's the best choice, but you have to convince the ADCOM that if you're admitted from the wait list, or if this is a case of wait list without interviews, you're wanting to get that interview, they're not going to make any steps positive for you unless they're convinced that if they admit you, you will come.
Yeah.
So absolutely bear that in mind. So it could be a twofold thing, because European candidates, as we know, Graham, they're coveted top US MBA programs for the most part. So in terms of, are they from an overrepresented population? Absolutely not. It's underrepresented population in terms of European candidates. So they definitely have that piece going for them, Graham.
Yeah, and I've said it before on the podcast. I don't think, I've yet to meet an admissions officer in the United States at a top MBA program who doesn't say, wow, we'd love to get, more Europeans. I mean, that's just, it's a group that is kind of dwindling in numbers because of the fact that there are a lot of quality MBA offerings, in Europe. So I think this person's going to get into at least one of these programs, just like the last candidate, right? Yeah. But I think doing MBA math and sending in that transcript would be really smart. I think they should only send it in once they finish the course, as you know, because they initially were asking us, should they let the admissions team know that they're taking it? And I would say just do it and send in the transcript. That would be the best way to go.
Yeah.
But best of luck to that person, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, in that regard, that's a very good point. But this candidate made it clear they're going to complete this within 2 weeks. So this MBA math that they're undertaking will be finished, completed, before decisions are ultimately released.
Right.
Now, if you're thinking, well, I'm going to do MBA math, but I can't do it right now because I'm working on a big project at work and this, that, and the other, then, it may be that you send a communication saying your plan is to do an MBA math. At the end of the day, the ADCOM's goal is when you start the MBA program, you are fully prepared to do very well in the academic environment so that you can also spend considerable time in the extracurricular environment. So, But in this candidate's case, they made it quite clear. They are squaring the time away to get it done.
Yep, makes sense. So thanks to that person for sharing their questions. And, again, I really think both of these candidates we've profiled so far today are going to get in to business school and probably have choices. Just sit tight, get the MBA math done in this case and send in the transcript and all should come out okay in the end. I did want to mention before we move on to wiretaps to the third candidate this week, I wanted to mention that there's later this week, I think it's on the 4th and 5th of March, London Business School is going to have their 21st annual conference for women in business, and it's called the Equal Conference, and they've got some pretty highbrow guest speakers. So I guess Senator Elizabeth Warren, Ann Richards, who works at Fidelity Investments, and so there's a bunch of people speaking at that, and it's something that you can sign up for on LBS's website. I think we're actually running some links to it on the clearadmit.com site as well. But if you're interested in women in business, the theme of the conference this year is flattening the gender curve. Very good use of like a contemporary thing, flattening the curve, but just throwing in the word gender to make it relevant for women in business. So very cool idea. And I know we've heard from the LBS students who are setting that up, and it's good, just good way to learn more about the LBS community too. So check that out if you're so inclined. Alex, let's move on though and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a DecisionWire candidate, and they are undecided. And I'll tell you, they applied to Berkeley, Booth, Dartmouth, Michigan, MIT, Kellogg, UCLA, and USC. And they ended up with offers from Chicago, from Dartmouth, from Michigan with $80,000 in scholarship, from UCLA with $100,000 in scholarship, and from USC with no money there. They're going to start school in the fall. They want to work in tech or maybe like media-related tech. And then right now, the companies they have listed as targets are Apple, Facebook, and Google. A GMAT score for this person was a 720, and they had a 3.1 GPA. And they note in their comments that they're really grateful to have gotten into some terrific schools. And they say they want to pivot from consulting into product strategy or marketing at a tech or media company. So, but they're having trouble deciding, and they say that they could make any program work from a financial standpoint. So they're not, they don't want to let money just drive this decision entirely. But what do you make of this, Alex? I mean, where would you tell this person to go?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, this is interesting. I mean, if you just look at it sort of very clinically, you've got Booth, they'll be in the, you know, the top tier out of the other programs listed. You've then got Tuck, maybe in the next tier. And then you've got Ross, maybe slightly ahead of Anderson and USC Marshall. So clinically, yeah, does Booth provide that sort of access to tech, product management and sort of, you know, whatever it is, product strategy and so forth at a good level? And I would imagine Booth does. I mean, it's a top tier program. So you've got to imagine top tier programs are going to be consulting, they're going to be banking, they're going to be tech. In terms of their, you know, their main recruiter base. If this was Kellogg, Graham, I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. You know, Kellogg looks just the sweet spot for this candidate. Kellogg and Booth. The reason why I bring Kellogg up is it's sort of right in that exact same tier as Booth. But Booth, maybe it's known more for a little bit for less, you know, other areas other than tech strategy and so forth. But you know, if money is not a factor at all, and it's really hard to make that particular call because we're talking 80,000 or 100,000 with Anderson and Ross. If money is not a factor at all, yeah, I'd put Booth just slightly in front. But I'm a big fan of Ross, quite frankly, Graham, and Ross with money in this scenario seems quite interesting to me.
Yeah, it is. This is a really interesting quandary in that, I mean, I think Booth does fine with tech placement. It's obviously the top-ranked school that this person got into. I think you put the schools in an order that makes sense to a lot of people in terms of tiering and everything else. But, you know, $80,000 is nothing to scoff at from a school like Ross, which, you know, for many is like a top 10 school or top 12, whatever. I mean, it's a really good program. They have an LA campus, so they are, you know, tied in to what's happening out west. So there are some benefits there. I think, you know, UCLA is also could be attractive, although this candidate says they want to work in Northern California. So it's not like they're saying, oh, I got to stay in LA and work in media. Like if this was a pure media play, and they were really interested in, you know, the film industry or something, then it's like, okay, you got to be in LA. Why wouldn't you take the $100,000 and go to a top, you know, top 16 school? I think most people would tell this person to just go to Booth and not look back. But I, you know, I would encourage them to spend some time just doing a little digging around what, you know, what Ross has to offer and getting to know some people in that community, particularly those going off to work in tech. Because there could be, you know, a compelling case made that $80,000 is, you know, not substantial. So,
right.
Certainly worth at least doing some homework on. But I feel like it's coming down to those. For me, it comes down to Booth as the best school that they've gotten into, and then Ross and UCLA as the schools that are maybe not at the same ranking as Booth, but that are offering a lot of, you know, scholarship dollars that, you know, need to kick the tires on at least. That's my take on this.
Yeah, and full disclosure, we have a couple of folks from the community weighing in also. And, you know, one of them puts Anderson in front of Booth in front of Ross. The other also is quite favourable with Anderson. So, I mean, these are just not straightforward decisions. And that makes perfect sense. If you're admitted to Booth, but then the next tier down, you're admitted to a couple of schools with money. That's why they're in a slightly different tier. I mean, that's just absolutely reaffirms sort of the ordering of the top programmes to some extent.
Yeah.
But a great problem to have, I think. Quite frankly, each of these programs, so Booth, let's focus on Booth and Ross and Anderson, each of them will provide access to great opportunities in tech that they're seeking, as would Tuck, which is another program they've been admitted to, which, you know, would fit very well with these other programs. But I don't think there's any money on the table with Tuck. And then maybe, you know, the sense that, you know, Tuck is a little bit more remote from that. I'm not sure. I mean, Tuck's an absolutely fantastic program, but it's not in this candidate's mind in the running at this point.
Yeah, well said. I mean, yeah, I think this is it just goes to show that you can't just go with the rankings when you're trying to make a decision like this. And so I would, again, just encourage this candidate to do some more digging, talk to students in these programs, and think it through. They may very well end up at Booth. And again, they're not going to look back whichever path they take, because they've gotten into some great options here. So, Alex, I think we're done here. We've done our three candidate reviews this week and managed to talk about a whole bunch of other stuff. but yeah, we'll be back in 1 week's time, maybe with some more news about what on earth we're going to do with Clubhouse, hopefully with some more reviews to talk about on the podcast. but thanks again, Alex, as always, for picking out these profiles and taking the time to review them with me.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Graham. Looking forward to seeing your mug in on the webinar to see how that barber has done. And everyone else, please stay safe.